What's up, everybody? Welcome to the TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. I'm Thomas.
I'm Tyson. Let's get this started. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. This is episode 22. Today, we're going to be doing a deep dive on magnesium, telling you what it is, how it works in the body, and who should be supplementing with it. But first, we want to do a little check-in. So, Tom, what's going on with you?
So I've been doing the carnivore diet. I'm about, I think today's day 13. Yeah, today's day 13.
2 weeks.
Yeah. It's been relatively easy. One good thing I do like about it is that it makes cheat meals, like, really harder to do. Because most of the time I can justify something. Like, you know, it's some dark chocolate. Yeah, there's a little bit of sugar. But if I don't eat any sugar for the rest of the day, it fits in with my keto diet. So it's fine. But with your carnivore, how do you justify eating chocolate? You can't. Mm. So I haven't cheated at all, just because, like, I can't justify anything. So that's one thing I do like about it, is that it's, I'm not lying to myself about anything.
That's good.
Yeah, so it's definitely keeping me a lot more on track.
Because there are a lot of low-carb foods that are shit. And you can justify a few bites here and there.
Yeah, you can justify some ice cream here and there. Because, like, as long as you just don't go overboard.
You'll still be keto, technically.
Yeah, and also, if I have a hard workout, I'm like, you know what, I can have a little bit more carbs and stay in ketosis.
For sure.
So, yeah, I do like this diet about that. I haven't really gotten sick of anything too much yet. Mm-hmm. I'm getting a little tired of the steaks, but I finally figured out a way to make them taste a little bit better and to increase the fat content. I used to just add butter to, you know, if I have some broccoli, add some butter to that. Now I'm just adding butter to the steak.
Delicious.
I used to do that and just kind of forgot, and now I'm starting doing that again. They taste so much better.
Oh, so good.
Yeah, my last, like, 3 days have all been, like, 65 to 70% fat, 35 to 30% protein. So just, like, perfect ratios.
Yeah, I know last time you were wondering ways to get up your fat, and that's it. Butter always comes through.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that's, depending on your definition of a carnivore diet, it may or may not fit.
Yeah, it's close enough.
Yeah, it's good enough for me. It comes from
me
an animal.
Me too. Yeah, it comes from an animal.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's been going good. But most importantly, I just finished good calories, bad calories.
Hold on. Is your girlfriend doing carnivore still?
No, she isn't.
Okay, so that didn't last.
No.
Okay, that's okay.
She just did that for a couple weeks. I think we went to a wedding a while back, and she was just kind of just doing a quick little cut for that.
Okay, drop a few pounds.
Yeah.
That's a good way to do it.
Yeah, just cut back on, just go zero carb.
Just go zero carb, exactly, yeah. So, yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, so I just finished Gary Taubes' book, Good Calories, Bad Calories. It is an absolute great read.
Must read.
Yeah, if you're on the fence about, like, hey, am I actually doing the right thing? Is keto? Because I know keto is completely just, like, backwards from what we've learned our entire lives. Like, so is sugar really the enemy? Is fat really good for you? Like, that type of thing. If you have any, everybody should just read it. Get it on Audible. If you don't like to read, you can listen to it. Just somehow get that information, because it's full of great information. It provides so many great examples about why fat is actually good and carbs are bad. So just to pick out a couple, like, my favorite example of why carbs make you fat is he provides the example of sumo wrestlers. And so sumo wrestlers typically eat between 50 to 100 grams of fat. I'm a skinny person.
Is that in a meal?
That's per day.
So that's nothing.
Yeah, that's per day. I eat more fat than that per day. I'm between 150 to 250 grams of fat a day. So blowing those fat guys out of the water when it comes to fat. The protein ranges from, like, 2 to 400. So I'm a little bit under that in protein, but not that much. I'm about 150 to 250 grams per protein per day. But the spot that's a major difference is the carbs. They're 500 to 1,000 grams of carbs per day. That's more grams of carbs than I'm probably going to get this entire month.
For sure.
Yeah. So, you know, just, like, looking at that example, it's like, okay, so how is their diet different than mine? Oh, they eat a shit ton more carbs than me. Maybe that's why they're fat.
Obese.
Yeah.
Yes. Not even as heavy. Yeah. They're huge.
And they work out all the time. Like, you don't become...
Yeah, they're not sedentary.
Yeah. You don't become a professional athlete, especially in something high demanding, like high energy demanding, such as sumo wrestling.
Very explosive.
Like, what would you consider that? Like, a 100-meter sprint? Would that be a good comparison?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, wrestling. Yeah.
I don't know any fat sprinters.
No. Mm-mm.
So, they're doing a very high-energy demand sport. They're obviously not lazy, so... Yeah.
Their training doesn't distinguish them. It's their diet that distinguishes them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, I thought that was a great example. And just that whole book just goes through, here's one study, here's why it's wrong, here's another study... Here's why I think it could be right. He doesn't really come out and say anything like definitive, but there's just like, well, here's the preventing science. It's clearly wrong. Here's some other science that could be right. We should test it more. And just the whole nutritional science shouldn't be called science because it's just a joke.
It is a joke.
Instead of trying to prove your hypothesis wrong, which is how every other field of science works, they just try to prove their hypothesis right, which is not how science works.
And that's not hard to do. Let me go cherry pick some data and I'll make anything I say turn out to be right.
Oh, yeah. Basically gravity wouldn't exist if you dropped a ball one time and it didn't fall. That's all you have to do to prove that gravity doesn't exist, is just prove it wrong one time. But that's not the way this is. It's like, if you can prove it right one time,
you're good.
Now it's golden.
Golden. It's locked in forever, write it in stone.
Yeah. It's just kind of crazy how that worked out.
Oh, yeah. No, it's very frustrating once you learn the history of everything. And that book is it's a beast. It really is. It's daunting. You're going to buy it and you're going to be like, oh, this is Bible 2.0. Like, it's heavy, it's huge, it's dense, but it's worth it. It's worth grinding through. Don't give yourself a timeline. If it takes you a year to read it, then so be it. Just read it. You'll be better for it, and you can spread that information and disseminate that information around your family and friends and hopefully help them.
Yeah, it's definitely a great read, and it really just points out just how flawed all the science is. And honestly, like, it doesn't take too much convincing. You just look around and just know that our nutritional sciences just aren't right.
Yeah, it's not working.
Yeah, and it's pretty clear, and he just kind of just lays out thousands of pages, or how many pages is it? 1,000?
Oh, I forget, but it's too long.
It's a long-ass book.
It is, yeah. No, I saw something. I didn't take a deep dive in this at all, but something on Twitter, like, is it 12 or 15% of adults are, like, metabolically healthy?
12%?
Yeah, 12%.
Oh. Are those, like, the professional athletes and the people that are doing CrossFit? Like,
I don't know. It's crazy. It's like, but I don't know how what they define as actually fit, but the number is so small. Like, so many people are overweight. So many people are just not healthy in other ways besides being not overweight or overweight. It's just, it's sad.
I'm wondering if you take that study back and just eliminate everybody from their 20s and you just look at people 30 and older, is it going to be like 5%?
Yeah, how small is that number?
Yeah, and then if you go to 40, is it like 1%?
Yeah.
Because, like, I mean, it's
pretty... How many fit 50-year-olds do you know? A handful?
Yeah, like less than 5, that's for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, 20, it's easy to be in shape. But, like, by the time you hit 30, that number drops off quite a bit.
Yeah.
I just hit 30, most of my friends are 30. I can see a lot of them changing.
Oh, that's funny. For Thanksgiving, saw a lot of my family members, but one of my nieces, I'm obviously talking about being healthy and working out, being in shape, all that stuff. Like, I can't help but talk about it. But one of my nieces, who is, if you looked at her, she looks like she's in shape. She's like, oh, look, I'm in shape. And I was like, no, you're not in shape. You're just young.
Yeah.
Because the way you live your life and how you eat, what's going on the inside is not pretty. I was like, but right now your metabolism, and more specifically your mitochondria, can't keep up with it. I was like, but you're going to be 25, 26. And you better hope that you start listening to me because things are going to change.
Yeah.
And if that's going to happen, sorry. You know what I mean? It is.
Yeah, when you have a new car, there's a lot of maintenance and stuff that you don't really need to worry about. But, like, you know, if you have a car that's 10 years old, got 100,000 miles on it, you better make sure you do every single oil change, you know.
Yeah, you better rotate those tires.
Yeah, you better stay on top of that type of stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
So, what's new with you this week, Tyson?
Well, not much. I've been real deep on this magnesium trip, not gonna lie, doing a lot of reading.
Yeah, we pushed this episode back a couple times just because you're still doing more and more research.
Yeah, because of me. But I guess actually what's new specifically today, this is actually funny. I never thought I would actually do this, but somebody came knocking on my door selling a product and I bought it.
People do that nowadays?
Yeah.
I didn't know that was still a job.
I know, it's crazy. So this guy, normally I don't even answer the door. It was just a weird, like, fate type of thing. I answered the door, and he was promoting locally sourced, like, farm foods. He's like, oh, I'm part of the farmer's market, and during these times, we'll actually bring the farmer's market to you.
Okay.
Like, local farmers. And I was like, oh, you don't understand who you're talking to, bro. I was like, I'm all about this. I was like, tell me more.
Yeah.
So it's like it's almost like a subscription service, but they send you like a box once a week and you customize it, right? And the only issue is you have to get a like vegetable box. It starts with a fruit and vegetable box, then you add in meats.
Okay.
And I told him, I was like, yo, I don't eat fruits and vegetables. this is not going to work. He's like, oh, just try it one time, please, you know, support the farmers. And I was like, okay, I'll do it. I'll give you once. I'll try it. And today was the first day the food came. And I went through all the options. I got no fruit. And you can tell me if you agree. As far as a carnivore, now you're a carnivore officially. I got garlic, black garlic. You ever had black garlic?
I don't know the difference.
Okay. It's like slow cooked garlic for like weeks. It's like black. It's actually delicious. I just cooked some.
Okay.
Black garlic, cilantro, and mushrooms.
Okay.
Those are my vegetables. So I got as close. I don't know if they are vegetables. They're really like herbs.
I mean, they're all just like, they're spices. I don't consider any of those things food. Like when I'm adding calories, yeah. I never count any of that stuff. It's just what's going to make my food taste better.
Exactly. So I feel like I got away with the, like I had to get something that wasn't a meat just to qualify get it meat. So I got something pretty decent. And then I ordered some ground lamb, some salmon, some like pork sausage, and some eggs. And everything was local besides the salmon. The salmon's from Alaska. But it was pretty good, honestly. I cooked it all up as soon as I got it because today's a refeed day for me. So I waited for this day for that reason. I cooked the ground lamb, the sausage with garlic, black garlic, cilantro, and mushrooms. All of it, all in a big skillet, and ate it. And it was delicious. Was it the most flavor I've had? In like 2 years, yeah.
Garlic, mushrooms, butter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was delicious, honestly. And I was actually really happy with the service. It was cool. The only thing, I'm going to cancel it because it's expensive.
Yeah.
And I already buy local. I already support like my local economy as much as I can. And I do it in a way that's way cheaper. Like we talked about last week, I buy like cuts of meat that are $3 to $4 a pound. So there's no way I'm going to spend $15 a pound.
How much beef heart did you just buy?
30 pounds. How do you know about that?
So my girlfriend is on Instagram a lot. And she I told her I was going to go to the co-op today to buy some beef heart. And she said, no, you're not. And I was like, why? She's like, Tyson just bought 30 pounds and posted it on Instagram.
So, that's funny. Yeah, that's true because last week, like right now during this little cut, it's really important that I'm eating the same thing at the same time and beef heart's been my choice. The co-op ran out of beef heart and that kind of threw me off. So I had to eat fish one day. I had to eat a bunch of liver the other day, which isn't a problem. I'm not complaining about it, but I would have preferred to eat the heart. One, because it's a lot cheaper and it fits the macro profile that I've lined out for myself. And I went there, it was Monday, and I was like, where's the heart at? They go, here it is. And they came in like a big box, and I was like, I'll take the box. So that's just how it was.
Yeah. Was it pre-sliced?
It was pre-sliced, okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So how many pre-sliced. Hearts is that? Like five, seven? I'm trying to think, how big is it?
Yeah, like seven or eight, because I think they're okay. A little over 3 pounds each.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I did that, and I'm still incorporating liver in my routine. I bought some liver too, and yeah, it's going good. I like the cut again, like I'm not struggling with it. And I feel like it took me a week or two to kind of, this is the second week. So it took me 2 weeks to kind of just get the ball rolling again. Yeah. You know what I mean? Just like getting the groove. Mm-hmm. I feel like I was kind of just coasting last week. I wasn't really focused, but I am focused this week. I'm doing good. And yeah, grind to Christmas and see how I look on Christmas, you know, and then reevaluate then.
Well, did Thanksgiving throw you off a little bit? Just like having all that flavor? Because I mean, what you just described to me, that meal, just doesn't sound like something you've had in like a year.
Oh, a very long time.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I don't think so. It did make me fatter, though. There is no doubt that my body changed a lot in the last 2 weeks.
Is that just water weight, probably a little bit of fat accumulation since your insulin levels have been such in check for so long?
Yeah, and I'm so sensitive to it. Yeah. And I don't know exactly. It was a lot of water, a lot of fat or something, but I ate like shit on Thanksgiving and then for like 3 or 4 days afterwards. And it wasn't until I think yesterday I finally was like, oh, my abs are coming back. Oh, like my things are tightening up. I'm like, okay, good, good. But for a while there, I was like, how can you grind so hard for 8 weeks and look good for 3 days? I was like, that's not worth it. That's not a good payoff. You know what I mean? So it sucks. I just wish there were ways to stay super hard, super lean, super cut, strong as shit and full of shit every day.
Growth hormone?
I know. God, I know.
I mean, there's ways to do it.
There are ways to do it, but It's just drugs, man.
I mean, like, there's always to do that and live a long time.
Yeah, that's the catch, I guess. I know. It sucks. That's true. But it's funny. Yeah, guys at work have been talking about drugs a lot lately, too, saying I should do it. And I always tell them, they better hope I don't do it. Like, legit, you better hope. You think there's some sort of competition between us now? I was like, my life is so dialed in. Like, people who don't know me really don't know how dialed in my life is. Like, you do, obviously.
Yeah.
But if I were to hop on a ton of drugs, holy shit, I'd be King Kong. You know what I mean? Or at least I hope I would be. So, that's it. But I guess that's a not so smooth transition into our topic of the day, which is magnesium. And you might have heard about some hype around magnesium. It is a pretty popular supplement right now. And if you just Google magnesium and what it is and how it works, you get a lot of kind of vague information, a lot of just trust us, it's good. And while I've been doing research on this for almost a month now, it's actually very frustrating because you're not going to get a lot of clear-cut answers. Like, I wanted to know, like, there's an laxative effect with magnesium that always gets brought up. So I went to a deep dive, how is magnesium absorbed? And guess what? We really don't know. We know a little bit how magnesium is absorbed in plants and some sort of, like, fungus, bacteria. But in humans, there's a lot of unknown variables. And that is, that kind of ties back to Gary Taub's book. Like, people think we know everything, but there are certain things we just don't know to this day.
Every time I read something, like, I'll go into it with one question. Maybe I'll get that question answered, but then I'll have five more questions. So every time, like, I get smarter, I feel dumber.
Yes. Oh, I hate that.
So nobody knows anything when it comes to any of this science stuff. It's all just guesses. And, yeah, when you're talking about all that magnesium, I don't know how many articles I've read, but it felt like I read one because it's just the same thing over and over and over again. Maybe a couple people had some different takes on it. But, yeah, just seeing your show notes kind of blew all the other articles out of the water.
Yeah, yeah. And the only reason I had to do that is because I had to just do my own research. And I've been pulling up textbooks from forever, from decades ago. I've been pulling up PUBG articles. PUBG. That's a video game. PubMed. PubMed articles from, like, the 30s. Like, I had to pull up articles from, like, pre-World War II. Like, we had some of this stuff kind of on the right track, and then obviously things got derailed within since like the 60s. You know what I mean? But I don't know. It's crazy. It really is how important magnesium is, and specifically, you want to go into just what it is.
Yeah, so magnesium is a mineral. It's, I kind of look at it as like a relaxing mineral, kind of the opposite to calcium. Calcium and magnesium compete for the same binding spots most of the time. So calcium is like, think of it as an excitatory mineral. So like, if you're going to flex your muscle, that's calcium. But if you're going to relax your muscle, that's magnesium. So they play opposite roles. So you do need a lot of magnesium because a lot of us just live in a more excitatory state than a relaxed state.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you can, you get magnesium pretty much everywhere. You can find it in animal source foods like meats, also fruits, vegetables, and even water. Think something like heavy water, you'll get magnesium from that.
Yeah, mineral-rich water. If you go swimming in the ocean, you can absorb some of it through your skin, or just Epsom salt baths, or most bath salts are going to have magnesium in them. You might want to check because a lot of them are going to have sodium instead. But yeah, that's another way to get some more magnesium in your diet.
Yeah, no, that's true. It's a positively charged ion. It's a 2+ positively charged ion. And it's the most abundant free divalent cation in the cell, which shows how important it is. It's super abundant. It has so many different roles. On average, an adult body, so somebody like Tom, a 70-kilogram male, like an average guy, contains about 25 grams of magnesium with 50 to 60% present in their bones. So the bones store roughly about 13 grams of magnesium. The muscles contain about 6.6 grams of magnesium, and other tissues contain about 5 grams of magnesium. So the bones are a huge store of magnesium.
So other tissue, is that mostly in the blood?
No, it's like soft tissue, cartilage, okay, things like that, yeah.
How much is in the blood?
Not a lot. 1% is in the blood, so okay, a very small amount. Okay. That's why magnesium serum blood tests are damn near useless, because you're testing a supply of 1%. So even if that 1% is in range, what if you're deficient in the other 99 spots of 99% locations of magnesium?
Yeah, and I also came across that you might get a false positive on it, because what's in your serum is what you're actually using, and that's not where your stores are. So if it's in your serum, okay, that's good, you're using it, but you don't know if you have how much you have stored up.
Exactly, yeah. And your body regulates how much magnesium is in your blood very tightly. If you're a healthy person, you're always going to come back, as far as magnesium serum tests, in normal range. You just will, because if you won't, you'd be very sick. So that's just a fact. And so that's why a lot of people are deficient in magnesium, and they don't even know it, because the test they use is very inaccurate and just not a good method to test magnesium. There is a test called magnesium RBC, so red blood cell. So our red blood cells contain not a lot of magnesium, but way more than in the blood themselves, like the plasma in the blood. So it's about 2 to 3 times more. So if you want to really get your magnesium tested, test your magnesium RBC, and you want a value over 6. If it's not over 6, then you're deficient. I don't care what the recommended range is. You want to be around 6.
Yeah, most of those tests are going to be within sick individuals. So when you're comparing yourself to a sick individual, like, the numbers are always going to be off, because you're not comparing sick individuals to healthy individuals. So that magnesium rates or your that proper like lab reading is going to be low, and the doctor's going to think you're fine, but he's comparing you to other sick people, not healthy people.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. So specifically, this gets a little complicated if you don't have like a science background, but how magnesium works in the body, it works as a cofactor in over 600 chemical reactions in the body. You might see a number around 300. That number's old, it's outdated. It's over 600, it's probably close to 800. Because like I said earlier, we really don't know everything that magnesium does. But every year, there's more and more research, and there are more and more chemical reactions that magnesium plays a role in. So right now, they say it's a little over 600. And specifically what a cofactor, it assists an enzyme doing its job. And all an enzyme is a large protein complex that gets shit done in our body. Do you have an easy way to describe enzymes? Can you think?
They just basically speed everything up.
Because without them, things would be too slow. We would not be human without enzymes.
Yeah, time is what makes chemical reactions occur. Like, if you have enough time, any chemical reaction can occur. But if you want shit done today, or like right this second, you need enzymes. So enzymes are just going to make everything happen more and more fast. It's what's going to separate like a human from like a coral reef. Yeah, a coral reef is alive, but it barely moves. You need like that slow motion video to actually see it move. Mm-hmm. For a human, we got plenty of enzymes. We can do shit as fast as we want.
Yes, that's great. Yeah, I love that example. Yeah. And so that's what cofactors do. They bind enzymes and they allow them to do their job properly. And magnesium binds to a lot of enzymes and allows them to do their job properly. And also a big one, which everyone knows about, whether they have a science degree or not, is just the production and protection of DNA. Everyone talks about cancer and DNA mutations and things like that. So magnesium is involved in stabilizing and creating DNA. Specifically, it's a cofactor in the enzyme DNA polymerase, which is a DNA that produces DNA from nucleotides. And I guess to transition to the next topic, which is magnesium and our metabolism, not everybody knows. I'm making a lot of assumptions that people know a lot about ATP, but ATP, if you don't know, is like our body's battery. It's what our body uses to get any sort of work done in our cells. And every ATP in our body is bound to magnesium. ATP must be bound to magnesium to make it biologically active.
So almost every process in our body requires ATP. Generating ATP still costs ATP.
Yes.
Like, usually 1 or 2 ATPs have to go into the system to create more. So not every function in our body, there are some gradients, but most of them that don't involve those gradients are going to have some sort of ATP.
Yeah, some sort of cost. You have to spend money to make money. That's how it is.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So I guess one of the biggest things about metabolism is just glucose metabolism. So the first part of glucose metabolism is glucose has to get phosphorylated. We need to attach a phosphate group to glucose. And that involves magnesium, actually twice over. And this is what makes magnesium unique, is it's able to react with substrates like glucose and like ATP, but it's also able to interact with enzymes. And the enzyme specifically, I think, is glucohexokinase. That's an enzyme that binds glucose and a phosphate group. And magnesium needs to be present in both of those situations just for glycolysis to begin. That's the very first step.
And glycolysis is just basically glucose metabolism.
And that's like the most basic form of our metabolism. That's how our body breaks down sugar to make ATP. And even like people like us, our dietary intake of glucose is very low.
Mine's like at zero right now.
Exactly, right? Mine's probably a little more today because I've had this extra stuff. But we still are producing glucose internally. Glucose is essential. It's not essential to eat from a dietary standpoint, but there are cells in our body that have to have glucose, and our bodies will just make them ourselves. So we are still both producing glucose. It's very essential.
Yeah, there's no way to just like avoid glycolysis.
No, there's no way. Yeah, exactly. But I wanted to go into, I guess, the science a little bit. This was me part of taking like a deep dive into why, like why specifically does magnesium do this and how does it do this? Because it's not good enough for me, for someone just to tell me how it is. I want to know exactly how it works.
Yeah, well, a lot of stuff that we've been told turned out to be wrong.
Exactly, because we didn't ask those like follow-up questions. So I wanted to really take a deep dive. So magnesium is bound to ATP. How is that really helping it? So a basic principle in biochemistry is that like charges repel each other. So negative charges repel negative charges, and positive charges repel positive charges. And that might sound kind of abstract and kind of confusing, but everyone, most people, especially if you remember your childhood age, have played with magnets. So if you have a magnet and you try to stick the two positive ends together, they're always going to repel each other. And you might be able to hold them together for a few seconds, but as soon as you let go and loosen up the force a little bit, they're going to bounce off each other because those forces don't want to stay next to each other.
Yeah, I don't know how much time I've spent trying to do that as a kid.
Right, you try and stick them together. Yeah. Exactly, right? So people know that's what we're talking about. And that exact chemistry, that biochemical, those type of reactions are happening in our body. So specifically, the hydroxyl group on glucose, which is what we want to add the phosphate group to in the first step of glycolysis, is negatively charged. And the ATP molecule, that third phosphate group, is also negatively charged. So if you just think back to the magnet situation, how are we going to get these two negative charges close enough together to interact and cause this chemical reaction to occur? So this is where magnesium comes into play. Magnesium binds to ATP, and it actually pulls down the oxygen associated with that phosphate group, that third phosphate group in ATP. It's negatively charged oxygen. So it pulls a positive charge in magnesium, pulls the negative charges from oxygen down, allowing that third phosphate group to be a little more exposed and a little less negatively charged. So now it's able to bind with the glucose and the reaction can occur. So without magnesium, that reaction would never occur. And guess what? You're not going to find that shit anywhere. I had to do so much deep diving to find out why why magnesium makes ATP more bioactive.
Yeah, honestly, I didn't come across anything close to that. Mm-hmm. It was just, it is involved in, depending on the article, 300 plus, 400. There's always a plus at the end.
Yes.
300, mm-hmm. 800. Yeah.
Whatever they gave you.
Yeah. I didn't come across any of that information.
Yeah.
I'm so glad you did a much deeper dive into this.
Yeah. I am and I'm not, because I feel like I've been going crazy, but it is. Yeah. And also comes back to ATP recycling. So our body is really efficient at recycling ADP to make ATP. It can go very readily back and forth. ATP, ADP. So ATP has three phosphates, ADP has two phosphates. But the catch is we can't convert AMP, which has one phosphate group, back to ATP. We just can't. If something happens and that ATP gets converted into AMP, that AMP gets broken down into a uric acid and released in our urine. So it's very important that our ATP supply, that purine supply, which is the backbone of ATP, stays there. And so that's where magnesium is important in that ATP recycling, because it keeps the ADP stable. It keeps the two phosphate groups attached. It doesn't allow two phosphate groups to get pulled off at once. It just allows that one phosphate group to get pulled off at once, which keeps the whole system recycling, keeps everything moving fast and efficiently. Again, another spot in metabolism where magnesium plays a crucial role is the connection between the citric acid cycle and glycolysis. So after glycolysis, you get pyruvate. And pyruvate has to be converted into acetyl-CoA before it gets entered into the citric acid cycle in the mitochondria. And if you remember our podcast on mitochondria, that's where the bulk of ATP is produced through oxidative phosphorylation from byproducts produced from the citric acid cycle. But it all starts from acetyl-CoA. So the enzyme complex that converts pyruvate into acetyl-CoA is pyruvate dehydrogenase. And that enzyme has a cofactor, which is, guess what? Magnesium. So magnesium plays such a huge role in our metabolism. It's crazy. In every area, magnesium is vital.
So it's involved in both glucose metabolism and fat metabolism.
100%. Yeah. The citric acid cycle, 6 of the 8 steps of the citric acid cycle have magnesium as a cofactor. That's crazy. 6 of 8 steps.
Did you come across anything on the phosphorylation system?
It is involved in phosphorylation in the electron transport chain. Yes. Okay. Mm-hmm.
So every way.
Everywhere.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I see where that number keeps growing.
You see what I'm saying? Yeah. 300, 400, 600. Yeah, exactly. So, and you mentioned a little bit earlier about the relationship between magnesium and calcium, kind of like a yin and yang. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. So they're competing for the same receptors.
They antagonize each other.
Yeah. So they're opposites. They're going to work opposed to each other.
Yeah.
I mentioned this earlier. So if we have calcium, causes our muscles to contract. And then without magnesium, they just wouldn't relax. So if you're magnesium deficient, what could happen with that is you can have a heart attack at the end of like a marathon. If you had heart disease, severe heart disease, you would die probably up within a mile once your heart rate gets high enough, once your blood pressure gets high enough, probably gonna kick over and die then. But if you're magnesium deficient, it's gonna take a while. You're gonna be losing that through your sweat for 20 something miles. Yeah, that's when that's gonna happen. And what that's gonna cause is your heart's gonna contract and that's it.
It's never gonna relax.
Yeah.
And it's actually, there's a terminology that gets kind of thrown around as far as heart attacks. It's really, heart attack is thrown around for everything that happened with the heart. With the electrical issues in the heart, and you see someone drop dead like that, and someone use like defibrillators, that's really a term called cardiac arrest. Heart attack and myocardial infarction, that's really a blockage of a blood vessel. And again, that can be caused by magnesium, and that causes a certain area of the heart to actually die from lack of oxygen, like part of the muscle will just die. But if someone just drops dead, it's cardiac arrest.
And I know cardiologists use magnesium a lot in their surgeries.
They do. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't, you know what's funny is I did not come across that in my research for this. I just know that. I don't remember where I heard that from.
Yeah, No, that's come up too, that there's plenty of doctors out there who supplement with magnesium during surgeries.
Yeah.
They just keep it like infused.
So unfortunately, our body's always going to run out of magnesium before it runs out of calcium. We just have much more calcium in our bodies. And we also don't waste it like we do magnesium. So back in the day, we used to have a much more tight ratio in our diets and just from our lifestyle in general. It was closer to 1-to-1. But now, depending on your diet, especially if you're following the standard American, that SAD diet, you're probably closer to 10-to-1, maybe even worse.
Yeah.
I feel like most of the research on those type of diets are going to be off, and people lie, usually lie for the better, don't lie saying that they ate a McDonald's exactly 10 times when they only ate twice. There's a lot of things that go along with that. And then also our diet has always been, everybody's been pushing, hey, you got to eat more calcium, dairy, cheese, all this stuff. Everybody's afraid of, you know, falling over when they're 50 and breaking their hip because they're not enough calcium. Well, too much calcium can actually be a major problem, especially because it's going to make that ratio closer to that 10-to-1. Where in reality, we want it closer to 1-to-1 from a dietary standpoint.
Yeah, that's true. And that's actually a great point. So the whole recommendation for calcium and magnesium, it's actually based on a mistranslation of a French scientist. Back in 1989, Dr. Jean Durlach, and I don't know if I'm pronouncing his last name right. It's Durlach. He was a brilliant guy back in the 80s who recommended the ratio should never exceed 2-to-1 calcium to magnesium. that got mistranslated that the recommendation should be 2-to-1 at least. So if not 3-to-1, 4-to-1, 5-to-1, 10-to-1. So that just implies, like, if someone says a ratio of you calcium to magnesium is 2-to-1, what does that imply?
That calcium is more important because it's first and it's the bigger number.
Exactly. So people ran with that recommendation that, oh, we need more calcium and magnesium is not important. But that's not what the doctor was saying. It was a mistranslation from, God, I don't know, 30 years ago that we're still dealing with to this day. So normally, like back in the day, hunter-gatherer times, our ratio was around 1-to-1. And doing a lot of this research, it actually reminded me a lot of the current guidelines and the current just dietary lifestyle of omega-3 fats and omega-6 fats. Because I'm not saying, and Tom's not saying, that calcium's bad. Without calcium, guess what? We're all screwed. You know, we need it. There's no doubt about it. And it's the same narrative with omega-6 fats. We need omega-6 fats. But the ratios are so out of whack that it's causing us to be in, like, disease states. So we just need to get these ratios in line, and then we can benefit from calcium doing its job properly and magnesium regulating that job.
Yeah, we need it in that Goldilocks zone.
Yes.
Like, right now, most people are going to be either way too hot or way too cold and not in that just right state. So, yeah, that's just where we need that ratio, because they're competing for... They're doing opposites in the body. So if one is outnumbering the other one 10-to-1, guess what? You're going to have a lot more of that impact. So with, like, if you have way more calcium, which is much more common, you're going to have much more inflammation. You're just going to be more stressed out. Even your muscles, you might have some muscle cramps, stuff like that. So just if you're just agitated, just the complete opposite of relaxed,
yeah,
you probably have too much calcium and not enough magnesium.
And how many people are too relaxed?
The only people I could think of are ones that don't live an American lifestyle. Like, I mean, like monks.
Yeah, exactly, right? It's not a lot of people. So, yeah, the only problem with, like, you hear about calcification of your arteries, and obviously that's exactly what it sounds like. It's calcium being deposited in soft tissue. And that happens when magnesium isn't available to keep calcium in solution, especially in our blood. So magnesium keeps calcium dissolved in solution. So without enough magnesium, calcium falls out of solution and deposits in our soft tissues. This leads to calcification in our arteries, like you think of our heart disease. This can also happen in our kidneys, leading to kidney stones. And we've talked about kidney stones before. What's the main component of over, like, I think 80% plus of kidney stones?
It's calcium oxalate.
Exactly. It's calcium. That key word, right? It's calcium. It's too much calcium. We have so much calcium in our body. And it'd be nice if our body was smart enough where we could both take, whatever, a 10-gram calcium pill. And our body's, okay, cool. We got enough calcium. Let's dump it in our blood. Let's dump it in our bones. That's not how it works. Everything's kind of balanced. Our body needs, there's specifically, I think, 3 hormones that our body needs to tell what to do and where to put this extra calcium. It's parathyroid hormone, calcitonin, and vitamin D. They're all involved in dictating the level and location of calcium in our body. And guess what? All 3 of these require magnesium for their activation and regulation. So magnesium converts vitamin D from its supplement form, or the stored form in our body, calcidiol, to its active form, calcitriol. Magnesium activates the hormone calcitonin, which helps preserve bone structure and draws calcium out of the blood and away from soft tissue and into the bones where it's supposed to be stored. And parathyroid hormone kind of does the opposite. So when our body senses low calcium in the blood, parathyroid hormone pulls calcium out of our bones into the blood where it needs it at that particular time. And magnesium is involved in all 3 of those hormones.
Yeah, doesn't it also play a major role in methylating B vitamins as well?
It does. Yes, it does.
Because it is involved with that methylation process of B vitamins, the only thing that I would recommend taking magnesium with would be B vitamins. Magnesium is often compounded with calcium in a lot of supplements. Don't take those. You probably already have too much calcium in your body as far as that ratio is concerned. So you don't need to be supplementing with more calcium. Just supplement with the magnesium, and that should get you most of those benefits. Or you could supplement with the B vitamins if you are B vitamin deficient. Me and Tyson are both carnivores right now.
We're good.
Yeah, I think we got enough B vitamins.
Yeah, we definitely do. Yeah, and talking about you don't need, like, calcium supplementation, the narrative has been, especially for, like, older women, is take your calcium pills to protect your bone health. But the research has come back, and that's just simply not true. So if you supplement with calcium without any sort of magnesium supplement along with it, there have been papers that show calcium supplementation didn't help with decreasing bone fractures. It actually hurt. They showed that it increases kidney stones, acute gastrointestinal events, and increases the risk of heart attacks and stroke. And that comes from calcification of our arteries. So if you're out there and you're taking a calcium supplement and you're not taking a magnesium supplement, please stop. Just take the stop taking calcium and start either eating magnesium-rich foods or start supplementing with magnesium now. Especially if you're an older woman and you've been just super diligent about taking calcium every day, just look into it. The science does not back up those claims.
And honestly, like, it never really made a whole lot of sense to me that we need so much calcium in our diet when there's so many people that can't handle calcium-rich foods. So where do
you're one of them.
Where do you get most of your calcium from?
Yep.
You're going to get it from milk, cheese, some sort of dairy. Well, what happens if you're lactose intolerant?
Yep.
Like,
you know what's funny? We've had these conversations. I think it might have been when I first went carnivore. We talked about, oh, what about calcium? Right?
I've never been like, oh, hey, we need to get so much calcium. I've felt for quite a while that calcium has been overrated. If the only places you can get it from is dairy.
Pretty much one source, yeah.
Yeah, like that. And there's so many people that are lactose intolerant that just never made sense. Like, these people would have died off a long ass time.
Yeah, those genes would have never made it.
Yeah, so I've never really kind of like made sense of that. So maybe we did, but I don't.
We did. I know we did. And maybe I proposed it because I thought, you know, what it shows to me is that the recommendations for calcium are grossly overrated.
Yeah.
They just are. Our body needs a lot less calcium than what's currently recommended with the RDA.
Yeah, definitely probably influenced by big dairy at some point, I'm sure.
100%. Yeah.
I mean, I remember.
And just supplements. I bet calcium is cheap as shit.
How many Got Milk commercials have you seen throughout your lifetime? Like, strong there's bones. A lot of money in dairy. So, I'm sure they've funded a lot of that research.
For sure. Yeah. All right, everybody. So this podcast turned into a really long one. So we're going to end it here. This will be the end of part one. You can catch part two next week. So you can find us online at tntwellnessandnutrition.com. Any emails, you can email us questions, comments, concerns to tntwellnessandnutrition@gmail.com. You can find us on social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all that.
Yeah, there's no tip of the week this week. It's going to be on next week's podcast, but it goes along great with this topic, and it's something I think really everybody can benefit from. Please rate and review us. That's how new listeners can come and find us, and that's how we get to know what you guys think of us. I hope everybody has a happy and healthy week.